You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KPOO, San Francisco, 89.5 FM. You have reached Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. And every Thursday at noon, Healthful Living serves up a palatable taste of the truth on mind, body, and our planet on our show, Reality Sandwich. You can listen to this show and any past shows on our website, realitysandwichradio.com. And today, for those of you who have tuned in before, you may be aware of Jane Hersey, who's the director of the Fine Gold Association, and we are going to have a wonderful show today involving essential fatty acids, omega-3s, synthetic additives, and violence. And so in the following up on Prison Focus, we will be talking about violence and diet in prison and how we can either use diet to help reduce the rates of violence and how food and food additives can increase that. So we'll talk about both of those with Jane. So let me see if I can get her on the line today. Jane, are you there?
Yes, I sure am. Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, good. Well, this is an exciting show because normally we talk about children and ADHD and the chemicals and how these artificial ingredients affect them. But today we're going to be talking about violence and aggression and also a little bit about our prison systems as well. And as you may know, the show before us is Prison Focus, all about prisoners' rights and all of that. So I'm excited to follow up their show with ours today and get into a little bit of a different topic than we usually cover.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, if we think of the prison population as being little kids who used to throw tantrums who were just a whole lot bigger throwing bigger tantrums.
Right.
You know, it's kind of an oversimplification, but that's really what we're talking about.
Exactly. That's a really good way to put it.
And the same chemicals that can cause the little three-year-old to pitch a fit, to lose impulse control, can have a very similar effect on an adult, only the repercussions are much more severe.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So maybe you can just tell people briefly, for those who haven't heard you before, about the Fine Gold Association and what you do and what you're about, and then we can talk about some of these details of both diet and additives and its effect on violence.
Great. Yes, I'd be happy to. We're a nonprofit organization, and most of us are parents of children who used to have a variety of learning and behavior problems, but many of us also have gotten interested in the Fine Gold program because of various health problems. For example, in my family, my husband used to suffer terribly from migraine headaches, and we found out that food additives were triggering them. Not all food additives, just what we consider to be the worst. And then at the same time, the chemicals that were causing my husband to have migraines were causing my daughter to behave in ways that today would be labeled ADD or ADHD. So what the Fine Gold Association does is shows people how they can find out if any of the symptoms that they're dealing with are linked to foods that they're eating. Now, to put people's mind at ease, this is not a harsh, restrictive, punitive kind of a diet. You know, this is ice cream and cookies if you want, and chips. It's just which brand of ice cream, which brand of cookies, which chips, and what will you order at the drive-thru at the fast food restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very liberal diet, but it's one that cuts out the things that seem to trigger the biggest problems, things like food dyes, artificial flavors, and some preservatives.
Exactly. And I have seen some really amazing results with some of my clients, both children and adults, especially children with autism and ADHD, and then adults with, boy, headaches, migraines is probably the biggest one.
Really? Yeah, asthma's another big one. Hives, That's a major major complaint as well.
Yeah. Well, let's see. So, you know, we know about a lot of, you know, we've often heard that a good diet is important to help prevent disease. You know, it can help prevent the diabetes and heart disease and cancer. And a lot of people come to nutrition consultants to figure out how to maybe prevent these from occurring if they have other family members. But we don't really talk about it in terms of violence or aggression or any of that.
Right. And that's really the, I think, the biggest contribution that the late Dr. Feingold made. By the way, he was head of the allergy clinic. He was chief of allergy at Kaiser in San Francisco. And what he discovered that was quite astonishing back in the 60s was that food not only affects our physical body, but food, particularly the additives in the food, can have a direct effect on behavior. And this is something that people just hadn't even thought about back then.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is one of our big focuses, is to show how behavior can be linked to what you're eating. Not in every case, but it often is.
Sure. So we're going to talk about two main categories today. One are the synthetic additives that Jane has sort of touched upon today, and how they can be very detrimental in terms of overall health as well as mood. And then also we're going to talk about fats and different fatty acids, especially the omega-3s, and how a deficiency of them can create a lot of mood and aggressive challenges, and how supplementing with them can really help turn somebody around and help balance them out. So maybe we should start with the fatty acid piece.
Sure, absolutely. You know, what has happened through the years, really, if you look at the past 60 or so years, the American diet has changed, but it's done so, well, sometimes gradually, sometimes not so gradually. It's changed from basic plain old food that was not much different from what people ate for the past few thousand years to food that would be unrecognizable to our great-grandparents.
Mm.
At first it started slowly. I would say it's accelerated, but the idea of feeding children a box of chemicals called a cereal that really has very little to do with cereal. Cereal is supposed to be about grains, of course. And feeding them beverages that are colored sugar water, and that the coloring comes from petroleum. You know, this, what children are eating today is really, really strange. And not only are they getting all these additives, but as you just said, Julie, the fats, they're missing the things that they really need. When food was less highly processed, it contained what I like to call the good fats. It can, you know, people need fats. Humans need fats in order to function, but they don't need the deep-fried, carry-out chicken wing kind of fats.
Mm-hmm.
They need the butter, the eggs, or whatever. They need the good sources of fat. And gradually, that has changed, because fats may be beneficial to us, but they're a big nuisance to companies that want their products to have a very long extended shelf life.
That's a good point.
So they get rid of them, and then they companies convince us that fat is bad, so therefore they raise the price and take out fat and put in fake things and call it low fat or fat-free or whatever. And then when they take out the fat because they're losing flavor, they add in all sorts of chemicals. So, you know, people are trying to eat healthy food, but the problem is that they're getting their information from the companies who are selling it to them.
Right.
They're not always the best source.
And along with that also is the fact that fats go rancid fairly easily, right? So the shelf life would be so much shorter if they were to use these good fats, that they use them for profit reasons as well.
That's right. But at the same time, you know, there are ways to preserve food without adding petroleum-based preservatives like the ones we eliminate, BHA, BHT, and TBHQ. You can have foods that have the good fats in them, and you can preserve them if you use a little imagination. Mm-hmm. Or it may be something as simple as using a preservative like vitamin E tocopherol,
mm-hmm.
or freezing, or canning, or sealing in an airtight seal. There are ways to do this. However, food is very closely related to economics, and most food companies will choose the cheapest way to do things. So sprinkling in some BHT is a lot cheaper than designing a good packaging for it. So you have to, as long as the consumer is aware that in many cases the finances determine what the company does, as long as they understand a few basic things, and we like to tell people that we tell them the secrets the food industry doesn't want them to know. If you're wise to that, then you can understand how to find the good food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we like to teach people.
Sure. So let's talk about some of the fats. There's, I guess, let's just simplify it into there's good fats and there's bad fats.
You know, and that goes from the good stuff and the bad stuff. Fat isn't bad. It depends on which fat. So
right.
Fat you find in fish and walnuts and wheat germ and green leafy vegetables. And, you know, really, Julie, if you just mentally go back about 100 years, that will really tell you that people ate what was considered very ordinary food. It wasn't overly processed, and it had a lot of, it had not just the fats, it had the vitamins, the minerals, all the nutrients in them. And when you eat these weird, strange foods that have a label of ingredients so long it takes up the whole back of the package, be aware, be very suspicious.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and the reason that the, quote, bad fats are important is not because we are somehow being strict nutrition consultants and we're not letting people have any fun.
Oh, correct.
But that the bad fats really imbalance the good fats, and then we can't get the advantage out of the good fats. And so,
absolutely. You know, if we don't want too much, we don't want extremes of anything. And I hate to say it, but I think Americans tend to go over the deep edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a little is good, then a huge amount is even better, et cetera. But a part of the problem is that the balance of the fats, the omega-3s and the omega-6s, this is way, way out of balance now. And one of the sources of the omega-6 is the soy oil, or what some of the critics call the industrial oils. But these oils now occupy a huge part of our diet. And one researcher claims that 20% of the calories Americans consume comes from soy oil. That means they're getting a whopping dose of omega-6s.
Mm.
And when your body gets too much omega-6 and too little omega-3, the omega-6 gets in the way of the omega-3 working. The omega-3s, there are a lot of things that can prevent them from being used appropriately by your body. Alcohol is one, trans fats are another, and too much omega-6 is another one. So it's just Americans tend to do things to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And our great-grandparents, you know, didn't do that. They just wanted something to eat, and what was available was usually pretty decent food. That's
right.
What they ate.
You know, we didn't talk about this before, but what do you think about canola oil? Because, you know, it's always probably one of the number one fats that my clients use before they come to see me. And
I think that's something I would ask you, Julie, because I think you're the expert there. But I've read both pros and cons, and I tend to lean toward the cons. The people who are leery about it seem to me to have a little better argument, but that's not something that I'm a real, you know, pro about.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, my understanding is that it's very similar to the soy in that it's very high in the sixes. And then there's all this other, you know, if you Google canola, there's all these other even scarier things about it.
I haven't looked into it in depth. What I do is I use olive oil. I believe it doesn't have omega-3s, but I believe it helps them to work better. Now, here again, I would defer to your wisdom on this one. But olive oil's been around for a very long time. Grapeseed oil is another one that I've heard good things about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too much of the factory-made foods, the drive-in, carry-out stuff. It's too much of that. It's not that you can't ever eat it, but when you really go overboard and you look at, my goodness, I've heard from families who say that they eat sometimes more than one or two meals a day at a fast food restaurant. And, you know, that's the extreme.
Right. So for people that are out there listening, maybe we could break the fats up. There's the omega-3s, which we'll talk about in a minute. There are the omega-6s, and we just talked about those, like the soybean oil, and how the omega-6 and omega-3 have to be in a fairly balanced ratio in order for you to be able to use both of those fats effectively. So like you said, more of one is not better. So it's not that omega-6 is bad. It's just that large amounts that imbalance the omega-3s becomes problematic. So that's, I think, an important point. And then there are saturated fats, which we've talked about a lot in the past, which we may get to today. And then there's the hydrogenated fats. And these are the, quote, bad fats, the trans fats, the hydrogenated and partially hydrogenated fats that also, again, imbalance the good fats, and they're not going to only imbalance the threes, but they're going to really wreak havoc on all of the fats, the threes, the sixes, the nines, and all of that, and really push them out and create a lot of imbalance. So those are really the ones we want to absolutely avoid as much as possible. And the other ones, we just want to be aware of what they are and try to balance them out. And so the one that's missing most in our diet is the omega-3s. So maybe you can talk about some of those and the effects that they have on the brain.
Yes, there's very exciting research going on as far as not just children and their ability to focus and to learn when they get these omega-3s. There's a lot of exciting work going on in England there, but also in the U.S. where they are finding that when adults are given supplements of omega-3, all sorts of good things can happen. Usually they use fish oil, but they can use other sources. And I think the most dramatic work that got people's attention took place a number of years ago at Harvard with Dr. Andrew Stoll, feeding omega-3s supplements to people who were moderately depressed. And they found that the depression lifted so effectively that they cut the study short and they started just giving everybody the omega-3s. And it seems like almost every week I read of another study where using omega-3s are linked to children's learning, even to autism, as well as to behavior problems. And the work going on now at one of the NIH institutes is they're giving omega-3 supplements to people who have been labeled as violent alcoholics. And they did a minor study, they did a pilot study, and found that the hostility was reduced significantly in this group of people. And they are now doing a much larger study. And the lead researcher, Dr. Hibben, believes that the deterioration of our food by changing it from plain old food to industrial food is really having a direct effect on aggression and on violence, and he feels it may actually even be changing the structure of our brain, which is getting into pretty scary territory.
Yeah.
So this work is not unlike the work that Dr. Bernard Gesch did in England, where he gave prisoners, he had two groups, and one group got the usual food. The other group were given supplements and oils and a mixture of good things. And what they found was that the violence in the prisoners, these were young males, the violence level dropped significantly. Now, here's the crazy part that you and I think all your listeners are going to be asking questions about. If the level of violence decreased so significantly in a prison, when the study was over, why didn't they continue doing this? Why didn't they give all of the inmates decent food and nutrients? Well, they didn't. They went back to the same old junk, and the number of violent behaviors just went right up to where it had been before.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think
I think the people making the decisions need to look at their own diet and figure whether the brain cells are working.
Right.
I have no idea why people would do that. I know there are economic reasons for continuing to have problems, but I don't really think that's a good explanation. I mean, we've seen this in schools that have made a dramatic change in their foods, and then when nobody's watching, they go back to the same old junk.
Right. There's a quote in your latest latest newsletter that I think is very funny. It says, "Giving prisoners bad food makes as much sense as happy hour at AA."
Right. Yeah, you know, I think the whole idea behind the prison system is to help and rehabilitate people.
In theory.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like with our children, if they get a hold of something that has artificial colors or flavors, and then they flip out, and then they have maybe a day or 2 days where they have a bad time, we may say, you know, you have to stay in your room until you calm down, but we don't feed them candy, you know,
right.
bright colored candy through the door while they're calming down. I mean, it is so, when you step back and look at it, it's pretty ridiculous.
Wow. You also state another fact in here, that the California's prison budget has doubled since the 60s,
yeah.
and that state now spends more on prisons than they spend on transportation.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not that easy to get statistics on what mm-hmm. actually is being spent on prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the figure of $26,000 a year per prisoner actually is quite low.
Mm. Maybe we'll have to ask our prison-focused
yeah.
friends later and see what
yeah.
they might know. You have here that it costs, like you said, $26,000 mm-hmm. for 1 year, but they spend only 99 cents per meal.
That's right.
So, you know, to your point, if you were to, you know, increase that by
sure.
50 cents or something, you're now increasing the food budget by 50%.
That's right. And, you know, another thing that's very surprising to a lot of people is that institutional food, 99 cents sounds really, really low. It is really low. But very often, a chef will come into a school or an institution and use their skills and buy very basic, inexpensive food and end up with good-tasting, nourishing food that can actually cost less than the junk.
Mm-hmm.
And this was seen in England, where they had a product called Turkey Twizzlers that they were feeding to the children. And by the way, I believe in England they were spending less money on the children than they spent on the prisoners.
Oh, no.
Yes. It was around, I don't know, 60-something cents, I think, per meal. And the Turkey Twizzler was described as all the parts of a turkey that you wouldn't eat if you knew what it was. And they grind this stuff up, and they add loads of synthetic flavorings, et cetera, and they deep fry it in who knows what and feed it to the children. And actually, these schools and institutions that pay very low prices for the food are actually overpaying, because the actual worth of the food is so low that it's the middle people, the middleman, who's really getting a profit out
right.
of it.
Right. Oh, wow.
A friend of mine is running a small school system. She's running the food service for a small school system, and she's using commodity foods and basic foods and spending much, much less than they had spent in the past, and she's providing wonderful food. It doesn't sound like it makes sense, but when you really stop to think about it, basic food doesn't have to be expensive.
Well, when you think that if you were to feed a family and go and buy the little Lunchable snacks mm-hmm. and the chips and the cereals, they're really pricey.
Yes,
and if you were to buy whole brown rice and some vegetables and some
mm-hmm.
meat, you're right, it would be less expensive than all these packaged fancy foods that are, quote, convenient.
Absolutely. And you know what my favorite is? Let me ask you this, Julie. Have you ever heard of people paying $5 a pound for oatmeal?
No.
Well, if you buy the oatmeal packets, the little bitty packets, and there's one called Strawberries and Cream, it's the instant oatmeal stuff. Well, actually, it has no strawberries in it.
Yeah.
It's apples that have been chopped up and dyed pink.
Why?
Because apples are cheaper than strawberries. So they package this stuff, and they spend more on the packaging, I'm sure, than they do on the ingredients. They grind up the oats. They add these imitation strawberry things with lots of artificial flavors, etc. And then they sell it to you for $5 a pound. If you do the math, when you look at how many ounces you're getting and how much you're paying, and figure it out, $5 a pound for oatmeal that isn't even good oatmeal.
No.
So
wow.
People don't think about that.
Yes.
And go just down the aisle a little bit, buy a container of plain oatmeal, stir in a little strawberry jam if you want, or buy some freeze-dried strawberries. Throw them in. You can make your own food with very little extra effort and save a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm. And be healthier and not have all these additives and junk. Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. The economics of food is really interesting. And those the meals where everything's supposed to be in the box, and what you really have is a box of pasta and a packet of powder that you mix with it,
mm-hmm.
and you're supposed to make this quickie dinner. Well, the consumer who pays $2 or more for one of these things thinks that they're only paying $2 for dinner, but they forget that there's no meat in it. And what they're actually getting is a packet of mystery powder and a half a cup of macaroni.
Mm-hmm.
Now, $2 or whatever they're paying, even $1, that's way too much for half a cup of macaroni.
Oh, that's scary.
So this is the sort of thing that we like to share with people so that they can be armed and they can understand, well, you know, is this really a healthier product, or is this some enormous global conglomerate trying to, you know, squeeze a little more profit and sell me something that isn't worth it at all.
Right. And not only is it not worth it, but as we've mentioned and we're going to talk more about, it's actually inhibiting learning. It's creating a lot of family problems, personal, emotional and mood issues. I mean, this is not without its own cost.
Absolutely. This is not something that, you know, people are paying a whole lot of money for things that hurt them.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. Well, cigarettes are another good example of that. But, and it's very hard for the average consumer to really know where to go to get some good information.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are put off by the fear that they'll have to eat weird, unfamiliar things, and it isn't that way at all.
No, and even the weird, unfamiliar things aren't weird after you try them, and they're actually quite good.
Ask any child about broccoli.
Right.
Or spinach or something.
Right.
it's something that can be delicious.
So for people that are just tuning in, you are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM, and I'm Julie Matthews with Reality Sandwich, and we are talking with Jane Hersey on the Feingold Association and violence and foods. Can you tell us more? There's some interesting studies about omega-3s for the developing fetus and for young children, and you don't necessarily need to go through the studies, but can you explain that this is really crucial at all stages?
Yes, it is. Actually, you know, a baby is created by the raw materials that the mother ingests. And when a fetus is deprived of these things, some of these researchers believe that they really can't make it up. In fact, the belief is that if a child does not get enough omega-3s, either before birth or at least before the age of 5, they might not be able to really learn about reward and punishment, to inhibit their impulses, to control their emotions. This is very similar to the sort of the sort of effect you see from a child whose mother has been ingesting alcohol, fetal alcohol syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, think about poor impulse control. We touched on that earlier. When it's a 3-year-old who has poor impulse control, you have to be aware that he may run into the street, or perhaps within the house he gets frustrated and he throws toys against the wall. Well, that same type of behavior does not necessarily go away when a person grows up. So the little one who throws a tantrum may break a toy, but what happens when that person is 33? And he's driving on the freeway, and he throws a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes, after I started researching and writing about this, I thought, you know, think about the people who get really angry. I mean, we all do. There are times when all of us get so angry, and we just want to bop somebody, you know, or do something like that. There's a little inclination that goes through our brain, you know, I'd really like to. And then we stop ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We put on the brakes because we're able to do that. What about the person who just isn't able to put on the brakes, or isn't able to put them on in time, is not able to control an impulse that they have?
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between me and the person whose brain just doesn't get quite enough stuff that it needs? I'm here and they're behind bars.
Mm.
You know, it might be just as simple as the person being able to stop their behavior long enough to think about it.
Yes.
A few crucial seconds, and it just really blows me away when I think about it.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what food or supplements they used in these studies they did on prisoners? Were they using fish oil? Were they using some supplements? Were they using some foods? Do you know?
I think in Dr. Gash's case that they were using a blend of nutrients. The B vitamins and zinc are very important to use along with the omega-3s. Different studies have used different things, but in the Gash study, they did not change the food. They just gave the prisoner supplements. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, should I do the Feingold diet or should I give my child omega-3 or some other supplement? Well, you know, you don't have to choose.
Right, you can do them both.
Eat good food and take a supplement.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of variation. The more recent work that is being done is focusing on the omega-3s. And the Dutch government is doing... Actually, their work is similar to Dr. Gesh's work, and in Australia and Ireland, they're looking at the essential fatty acids. Same thing with Canada, and of course, I mentioned in Britain, there's a lot of work going on about the benefits of these. Now, you know, we think people should eat better food, and if necessary, or if they wish to, consider taking supplements. You know, don't have to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
You can have them all.
Right. So that was a good point. So the B vitamins, the zinc are mm-hmm. good to add. I mean, certainly a multi can't hurt any.
Sure. Minerals. Well, the zinc would be in that. Yeah. Here again, this is your territory more than mine, and I agree with people that we're probably, even if we try to have a good diet, we're probably not getting all that we really should get. And I know I would rather consume a little bit of cod liver oil than worry about eating a whole lot of fish and then worry about whether there's mercury in the fish
right.
and all of that
right.
sort of thing.
That's a very good point. And I think the really good follow-up to that is that if there are people that are going to go try this out after the show, you want to look for a fish oil that is a really good quality, because the last thing you want is a rancid fish oil that's got, you know, now you need to use your good antioxidants to, you know, to all that stuff. So when you're looking, you look online or go to a store and ask and buy the best quality one you can find.
Yeah, Julie, I have heard people have told me that if it says it's purified to pharmaceutical grade, that means that they have removed any of the heavy metals that might be in the fish. There are several brands that we've researched in the Feingold Association. Now, our research is not to verify that this is a superior product, really, but to say that the product does not contain artificial colors, flavors, or the preservatives we eliminate. But the companies that tend to be the most receptive to the work that we're doing, and I suspect to the work that you're doing, these tend to be the companies that really have high quality products.
Mm-hmm.
So we have lists of brand name products, both food products, supplements, non-food products. We do a lot of researching of products, and our members do pretty well by going by what is listed in these books that we put out.
Yes. Can they find the information about the fish oils on your website or in your materials?
I don't think you would find it on our website as much as in our supplement guide.
Right. And people can join the Feingold Association and get that information, correct?
Yes, they can. May I give out our website?
Please.
Okay, great. It's addddiet.com, addddiet.com. They can also call 800-321-3287, 1-800-321-3287. And we're always happy to send them complimentary information, sample newsletters, or answer any questions if we can. We certainly will try. They will find a huge amount of information on our website, though. And they can also read all of part one of my book called Why Can't My Child Behave? It's right online on our website as well.
Wonderful. Let's talk about the artificial ingredients. We haven't looked at it from the perspective of aggression and violence. And what can you say about that?
Well, what I'd say about that is that the studies that should be done on the link between things like food additives and violence, The studies that should be done really aren't being done. Mm. We do have over 30 years of parents who are who have seen a dramatic change in their children's behavior when they take away things like artificial food dyes. And just in case your audience isn't aware, the dyes that we're talking about are the ones that are things like yellow number 5, red number 40, blue number 2. These are made from petroleum. Mm. Now, while the exact studies we would like to see haven't been done, there are plenty of studies that have shown all kinds of harmful effects from these things. Many of these studies are done on animals, and they show reproductive damage, DNA damage, cancer, I mean, all across the board, you name
it. Wow.
Yeah, it's if people understood that, yes, they're pretty, I love pretty colors, but I don't like to eat them because as pretty as they are, they're petrochemicals. Mm-hmm. And even if it's only a little bit, for some people, it only takes a little bit of these chemicals. One sip of the synthetic drink could set a child off. One little artificially colored candy can set off a very sensitive person.
Yes, and I think that's one of the things that's really key to mention to people out there. People often will say to me, well, my child eats X, not mm-hmm. good food, whatever that food is, but they only eat a little bit, but they're only getting a little, you know.
Just a little E. coli here and there.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Ask a parent of a child who has a peanut allergy, you know, can I give them a little bit of peanut butter? Yeah, it depends. We're all different. Mm-hmm. Yes, it may be that some people don't have an obvious reaction to it, but just because it doesn't affect your behavior doesn't mean it's not having any effect on you at all.
Right, because your liver still has to process those chemicals,
absolutely.
And it's putting a burden on the system. And
right, and you know, the way the Feingold program, pardon me, the way our program works is that we recommend that the whole family go on the program. It's not really a diet. It just means that the whole family eats the better quality of foods. And it also means that you're only cooking one dinner instead of cooking, you know, multiple.
Mm-hmm.
And what we hear over and over again is that the family went on the Feingold program because little 7-year-old Johnny was ADHD. And lo and behold, before long, his sister is able to focus in school, and mom isn't getting migraines, and dad isn't getting eczema, and, you know, this isn't happening and that isn't happening. This is so common.
Mm.
So if a family member, if one family member is sensitive, there's a really high probability that other family members will be sensitive, but maybe to different degrees. The same additive, as I mentioned earlier, that would give my husband a migraine would cause my daughter to lose eye control, to be very dreamy and distractible, and have symptoms of ADD.
Mm.
So, you know, it's that old-fashioned different strokes for different folks mm-hmm. type of thing. But they're not good for anybody. And
right.
I think if most people understood that these bright-colored neon foods are basically petrochemicals, and if the ingredients were actually truthful about what really was in it, I think very few people would buy them.
Yes. Didn't you say in a past show that this artificial strawberry flavoring has, it's like dozens of ingredients?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A single flavoring can have anywhere from a handful to hundreds to thousands of different ingredients. And what has happened in our, not just in our food, but in our society in general, is that in the past 50 or so years, petroleum has become more and more and more a part, a raw material for things that are made. When a flavor chemist has a computer program that can take a real flavoring and then break down all the chemicals that occur naturally and come very close to duplicating it with petrochemicals, what happens is the company saves money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what it's all about. But what price, you know, the company saves money, but the consumer doesn't.
And didn't you say on a past show that it's 50 times more expensive for the natural vanilla than the artificial?
Oh, more than that.
Wow.
More than that, yeah. Natural vanilla, it varies depending upon the climate, et cetera. But it can cost as much as $1,200 a pound for real vanilla beans, depending, again, on many things. Fake vanilla, which if you read a little bit about it, it will say, well, it comes from wood or it comes from trees or it's a wood product. Well, fake vanilla can come from many things. Petroleum is one. But it also can come from the waste product of pulp mills, paper mills.
Oh, no.
Yeah. If anybody's ever been downwind of a paper
mill.
That's
like highly toxic stuff, right?
Oh, man. You would think you had fallen in a whole vat of rotten eggs.
Ugh.
It's just overwhelmingly awful. And for some strange reason, the fake vanilla, the imitation vanilla, which is listed as vanillin, has a flavor. I don't know whether they do anything to it to change it, but it has a flavor that can be duplicated or that can be very similar to pure vanilla extract. And so instead of dumping it into the waterways, in some cases they have built bottling factories right next to the pulp mill, and they put the stuff in bottles and they sell it to you.
Oh, it's terrible.
So instead of $1,200 a pound, it's like $6 a pound. Now, when the shopper goes to the supermarket and she sees this tiny little bottle of pure vanilla extract, and it costs, oh, I don't know, $1-2, and then she sees this huge bottle of imitation vanilla that's 99 cents, she thinks she's saving money.
Mm-hmm.
What she's actually doing is grossly overpaying for the fake vanilla. It's not something. Now, it can come from other things as well. As a matter of fact, one innovative researcher was taking cattle dung.
Oh, boy. Well, that's better than pulp
mill. Extracting a vanilla essence to be used in fragrances and candles and stuff like that. So in addition to staying away from swallowing this stuff, I stay away from perfumes, fragrances, all of that stuff. And it doesn't matter whether it's really expensive perfume or something that they use to put in the laundry detergent. The companies, companies are set up to make money. That's what a company does.
Well, I find it fascinating that Godiva, which is supposed to be one of the best chocolates on the market, uses artificial vanilla.
Yeah, vanillin. I know, and yet I can go into a discount store or into the baking section of a supermarket, and I can find plenty of very inexpensive chocolates that use natural vanilla flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's not, it's not what you think it is.
Right.
And here again, if you're not wise to what's going on, as far as the industry is concerned, you're going to end up spending a whole lot of money for really poor quality stuff. So, why not eat the good stuff?
I agree. I'm all about that. So I know that there's been some interesting studies also using artificial ingredients and looking at the violence in schools. And can you talk about, I think there was a school in Wisconsin?
Yes. This is a very, very exciting thing. This has been going on now for several years. There's an alternative high school, and that's a polite way of saying this is the school for the children who are expelled from their neighborhood schools, who can't make it there, some of whom have been incarcerated. This is a high school where a wonderful company called Natural Ovens donated the money to transform their food. And what they did was they went in and they provided cooks in kitchens. I mean, there are schools here and there that still have kitchens.
Yeah.
They have cooks in kitchens making real food from scratch for the students every day. And the change in the behavior and in the ability to learn was dramatic.
Wow.
And this is a school who, before they changed the food, and this was the only change that they made, the children, there was no effort to change what they were eating outside of school. Of course, they did teach them why they fed them the things they did, why they were eating the things they were. And the children ate real food, homemade things, the good old-fashioned foods. And they got very interested in it. And this is a school that had hired a policeman to be on campus full-time. They had, you can imagine the kind of problems that they had, the behavior problems. And the principal explained that every school in Wisconsin, at the end of the year, they have to file a report how many expulsions, how many suicides, how many fights, how many weapon seizures or drug seizures, etc. And after they had been on the food program, there were none.
That's amazing.
None. Now, this is not your garden variety high school. This is an alternative.
Wow. That's really, really amazing.
And not only that, but what also came as a surprise to the people at the school. They expected that the behavior would improve because they knew a little bit about that. But the students were better able to focus and to learn. The teachers were spending their time teaching instead of disciplining. And yes, these children, many of them come from troubled families. They still need help. They need counseling. But the behavior has changed drastically.
Mm-hmm.
And when the younger children come in at the beginning of the year, the older students pretty much coach them and explain what they're doing. And it's just an... Oh, and you know what else they do? This is very interesting. Every semester, they have one day where they return to junk food. They feed them the usual food, and they ask the students to keep a journal of how they feel and all. The students hate it.
Really?
They hate it. They really appreciate and enjoy the good food. So many adults have the misconception that if you feed kids healthy food, they'll hate it.
Right.
You know, it's not really the way they think it is. I mean, you can do it in an intelligent way. You can feed them really good-tasting things that they're going to love. It's if you do it badly, you know, if you change their diet
sure.
drastically to strange things they've never heard of and that look funny colors, sure, any child's going to say, ooh, yuck. But that's part of what we do at Feingold. You know, you can have it both ways, and we show them how.
Mm-hmm. Those are amazing, amazing stories.
They are, and there are others, too. You know, the amount of money, here again, we're always getting down to money because this whole issue, as you well know, is about money, mm-hmm. companies saving money,
mm-hmm.
higher profits, et cetera, which is fine if you don't hurt people in at the same time. But what Barbara Stitt, who she and her husband donated this money, she said, you know, we gave them $20,000 a year. That was it.
Mm.
Now, one child in a detention facility would cost the community more than $20,000
wow.
a year. Yeah. And what about the schools that have all this garbage in their vending machines? You know, there are ways around that. They're doing it because they want to earn money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Most of the money doesn't go to the school. It goes to the cola giants. It goes to the companies that
ugh,
fill them up.
Right, right, of course.
Well, right.
They
well,
get a little
of
token.
The wiser schools have done is they've gotten rid of their vending machines, brought in their own vending machines, stocked them with healthy food, and kept all the profits.
There you go. Now they're thinking, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are solutions to all these things. When you talk to some people about improving school food, you know, they just roll their eyes and think there's nothing that can be done. You know what? There not only is a lot you can do, but it's being done. It's being done all over the country. It's being done particularly in England as a reaction to those terrible turkey twizzlers. You know, people, it's really very simple. Children do better when they eat food, not petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
Adults, the same thing is true.
Yes. So for people that want to look up more on that school, where can they, what should they look up?
They can go to a separate website that we have, and it's school-lunch.org, school-lunch.org. They could also get to it through our Feingold website, the ADDDiet.com, ADDDiet.com. Any way that they want to reach us, it's not hard for them to ask questions. If they have questions, we can very often direct people toward other nonprofit groups and other resources. The thing is, there's, as you know, Julie, there's so many resources out there. It can be bewildering for somebody to know where to begin. And we like to be aware of the help that's out there, whether it's from us or from other nonprofits that we admire.
Mm-hmm.
And we share that information with people. But as far as school lunches, boy, there's so much that can be done to improve them.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of room to make improvement.
Absolutely. And, you know, one or two people in a community can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it. It's not that hard to do. We've done it.
Wow. That's so great to hear. So what should parents do if children are having behavioral problems and they suspect that these synthetic ingredients are affecting it?
Sure. Well, they can go to our website, to ADDDiet.com, and we publish books listing thousands of brand name products that do not have the additives. You know, this is not a program where we say, well, don't eat this and don't eat that and don't do that. You know, well, okay, you're on your own. What we do is we give very specific information. If your child is accustomed to having cookies, these are all the cookies that are okay. We don't make judgments about which is the good food or bad food when it comes to sugary foods. I mean, you know we have opinions. We don't think you should overdo it. But we don't tell people to take away junk food or to take away candy. We encourage them to switch from the awful candy to the more natural version. And then once they get a little bit into this, they can start to tweak the diet. They can start to gradually cut back on the sweet things and then improve the natural foods. It doesn't have to be done overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, if it takes 6 months to get a better diet, hey, I think that's just fine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and this is really crucial because what we want to do is not only help the families and the children, but we want the children to want to do this. This is not something where you know, you walk around and watch everything the child puts in his mouth. What we do is we show the parents how to do this in such a way that the kids will see that they're not going to have to give anything up.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a family that's not accustomed to having a lot of junk food. That's great. Or if it's a family that is accustomed to having junk food, well, here's what you switch to, the candy bar without the vanillin, et cetera. And then what happens is the children don't feel that they're having to lose anything. So, you know, if they get a lollipop from mom or from the lady at the bank, they don't care. They get the lollipop. And then what happens is these typically are very bright children, and they begin to know, even as young as 3 and 4, they begin to notice they feel better, they behave better. Maybe they're not getting asthmatic attacks, or maybe they're not getting stomach aches, or maybe it isn't taking 2.5 hours to get to sleep at night. They notice benefits. And then after that, once the child understands the connection, and it doesn't take long, then when they're out in public, maybe mom isn't around, they're at a friend's house, and somebody offers them a fluorescent food, they usually turn it down.
It is very fascinating. I've seen that myself. And like you said, one of the best things I thought you said was how the school will allow them to eat all the junk food they want one day. Because I found that once kids, they're not forced to do it, but they see how they feel when they're eating the other, then they'll automatically make that decision for themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, the junk food day at the Wisconsin school, at the Appleton school, is something that the students would really rather not do. I think I didn't ask the details, but I think that one day they come in and that's what the food is. You know, it's the old junk stuff, and they go, "Oh no!" But yeah, these kids of all ages, from the very youngest age up, we found are very bright. It doesn't take them long to understand that when they eat this, this is how they feel, you know, the consequences. And if a child is out somewhere and he does eat something with one of the additives and he has a bad day, well, then he's learned something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's we don't insulate our children from learning. Of course, we try to make the learning experience something that isn't going to be terribly damaging. But, you know, that's life. You try. It's trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, even if a child wants to eat the additives at the beginning, usually before long they realize it just isn't worth it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they take it on as their own program. And then, you know, it's something that becomes very simple. When the parents do the grocery shopping, they buy the good stuff. That's mm-hmm. what's in the house. That's what the children eat. When the kids are away from home, they become very savvy. They know how to read labels.
Mm-hmm.
They know what's okay and what isn't.
Yes. Well, once again, Jane, thank you so much for being on today.
Well, I love being here on your show, and I really appreciate your giving us a chance to share with people the great information that we have.
Absolutely. You do such a great service for people. And if they want to find out more, they can go to addddiet.com, or they can call 800-321-3287. Thanks so much, Jane.
Thank you, Julie.
Bye.
Bye now.
You have been listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. You can find out more about my services at healthfulliving.org. You can get this radio show or any past radio shows for free download at our website, realitysandwichradio.com. And I just want to make one little last comment before we go.
in the same venue of violence and prisons and all of that, there is an amazing movie called Doing Time, Doing Vipassana, and it's about bringing meditation into some of the most violent prisons in India and what an amazing impact that has had. And I think that it's really important to start looking at, whether it's our children, whether it's the school systems, whether it's the prison systems, looking at foods that are supportive to all of our health and actually the health of our community and the health, even the health of our economy, when we think about all the money we have to spend incarcerating people, when we can look at how to give them some tools, whether it's tools on how to eat to have a better mood or whether it's tools such as meditation. So I highly recommend that film, Doing Time, Doing Vipassana. It's excellent. And you can listen to our show every Thursday at noon, Reality Sandwich, here on KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. Again, I'm Julie Matthews. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.